This is Rafe Jenkins Podcast, E2E, entrepreneur to entrepreneur. Make sure you follow me on Facebook at Rafe Jenkins TV and consider sharing this podcast with your friends. Today we're with Glenn White and we're going to be talking about what to expect in our first year of business. Hey Glenn, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, my background is I was born and raised in Texas. I actually came from an entrepreneurial family. My grandfather had started a construction company prior to me even being born. And that led to my father running his own construction company that then, when I came along, we actually teamed up together and ultimately started a waste disposal company. So from that, we grew that waste disposal company to about 7 states, and we had over 60 employees. Before we sold that company, we were actually forced to sell in 2009. Actually, part of it was late 2008, and then part of it was early 2009. From there, I then broke off and started my own real estate investment company, which during that time, actually, I started investing in real estate in 2002, 2003 individually, but I decided to make it into a company at that point. So, my education background is in finance. I actually was going to school to get an economics degree, and about 2.5 years in, realized that there's not much you can do with an economics degree, so the closest related was finance, so it was kind of by happenstance. Went to the University of North Texas for the first year, then went to U of H for 2 years, and then came back and finished at North Texas.
Cool, man.
That's about it.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the company you run right now. How you started and everything.
Okay. It was a product of necessity, I would say. Our real estate company, actually, after 3 years of extremely successful business, we actually got defrauded by a company that we knew well and somebody that we trusted. We got defrauded for about $1.5 million on a very large purchase, which led to an SEC investigation and all these different things. Ultimately, my company was suspended from doing any sort of real estate activity for a period of, originally the suspension was supposed to be 5 years, but ultimately we were able to, because we were working with the SEC investigating this other company, and we had some intimate knowledge of who the players were and things like that, they ended up letting us out of that suspension early. So it was 3 years instead of 5. And out of that necessity, I ended up having to go into the workforce. So I found an industry that had kind of a low barrier of entry, which was the automotive industry. And my finance background linked itself pretty well to that. So it was a fast rise to achieve basically the position of a finance director, which kind of runs all the back-end banking for the dealership. And so I spent about 5.5 years, 6 years in that industry, and realized and learned a lot of the problems that were in it, particularly for independent dealerships. So independent dealerships needed better financing, and that's what led me to start this business. After 2 years in a row of the companies that I was working for in the automotive industry, I got laid off right around Christmas time, 2 years back to back. I kind of realized exactly why I never wanted to pursue corporate America, because both dealerships or companies that I was working for decided to sell off the stores to someone else. And that's something that's kind of common about the automotive industry. There's a lot of change and turnover, and stores change hands a lot,
right?
A lot of those kinds of things. And so people like to bring in their own team at that point, and kind of start over. So I got laid off 2 years in a row. That's what led me to start this basically last year with some contacts that I had, and so now we're an automotive finance company.
Yeah, good for you.
We facilitate that.
So I know you're passionate about helping people, and I wanted to basically ask you on how people could be successful in their first year of business. All right, so let's talk about that. Like, what kind of advice would you give to a certain individual who's about to start their company, what to expect the first year, how they could be successful their first year?
Absolutely. the first thing I would say is you really want to be as lean as you possibly can, right? I've seen a lot of people, even friends of mine, that have tried to go into business, and they get caught up in the disbelief that you need to present this big, you know, grand presentation to everyone in order to be successful, right? You need to be, you know, you need to have this really nice office and these really nice furniture and really nice things. And,
right.
And you need to be, you know, presenting yourself in a certain way. And I would say that's a strong misguided opinion when it comes to real business. Real business, from every experience that I've had and every experience that I've seen that's been successful, you try to bootstrap it as much as you possibly can, even if you have a phenomenal idea. I mean, you try to save and save and save everywhere that you can, so that you run and operate as lean as possible. Because in those first few years, not only are you needing to reinvest so much capital into your business, you're going to encounter problems that
right.
are going to come up, things that are going to happen in those first few years that are unexpected. And a lot of times you have to have cash in order to be able to deal with those problems.
How much planning did you do? How much planning did you do to start your first company or how about this company?
With this company, about 3 months, I would say, you know, kind of taking each step as I go. And, you know, I have no problem saying that I started this company with very little money.
Right.
You know, as I said, being laid off 2 years back to back, you know, that ate a lot of our savings. And so this company came along, and I actually sought the wisdom and guidance of some people around me. I'm fortunate enough that my wife's father is actually the chairman of the Texas Society of CPAs right now. And so, for that reason, I consulted him, I consulted my father and some other people that, you know, obviously I respect their opinion. And I said, you know, this is what I'm thinking about doing. What are your thoughts?
Right.
And most of them were like, it doesn't seem like it's the right time. You know, probably should get back into the workforce, find a job, and, you know, wait till your savings is built up before you jump out here and do something like this. And so I'll tell you, for me personally, you know, it was prayer. It was prayerful consideration and asking God, like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
Because the last 2 years in a row, I've spent, you know, 3 or 4 months unemployed and searching for a new job in corporate America. And this opportunity has presented itself, you know, you tell me which direction you want me to take.
That's good.
So waiting for him to give me some feedback about what I should do, and then some strategic things in place.
That's good.
I formed some great partnerships with some people that had the software that I needed for my business, and they were willing to give me. Two of them were willing to give me the software for free if I signed up by the end of 2016.
Right.
One of them was willing to give me the first 3 months for free because they were willing to let me get started. And those were really just conversations of just asking. And I think a lot of times business owners don't realize that if you just ask for those kinds of concessions, you'd be surprised how oftentimes you get those. And that's something that I got to see firsthand from my father being in business for so many years. He always showed me that, you know, hey, you don't know unless you ask, right?
And right.
All they can say is no. So when you need those upfront resources, you know, don't be afraid to ask somebody to let you use it or let you have it for free, because a lot of times there are upfront or initial sign-up costs, but then there's also ongoing monthly costs. And a lot of times, just like your business, they're really more focused on the long term. They want you to be a long term customer, and they want that monthly revenue
right.
more than they want the one time upfront.
Right.
And that saves you a lot of, you know, that saves you a lot of capital that doesn't have to be deployed on those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So those are some things that I would tell people to. A great place to start, I guess, is you know, is trying to do it as absolutely inexpensively as you can.
Yeah. So is it possible for a company to start without money?
Yes.
How?
Yes. I mean, my company was a great example. My company started in 2016 with $700. So I shouldn't say no money, but I should say that it can absolutely be done without a lot of money.
Right.
I started with $700. I built my own website, and I had never done that before. But there's so many resources online to figure it out for yourself, and you have the time. So don't be afraid to find a plugin, find a website, ask questions, you know, utilize resources, YouTube, videos, blogs, I mean, ask the internet, anything you need. There's resources out there to figure out how to do it, right? And play with it, you know, just work through it until you figure it out. So I built my own website. Like I said, the software company that I was working with, one of them normally charges $4,500 up front. The other one charges $2,500 up front.
Right.
I asked both of them if they would have let me set up, you know, for, you know, before the end of the year, they'd let me set up with them for free in exchange for we would start paying them monthly revenue. Right?
Huh.
And both of them were willing to agree to that. The credit union was willing to put this on their platform, which normally is a $3,500 setup fee, and then it's a $400 a month ongoing monthly fee with something like that. So, again, they gave us the first 3 months with no setup fee.
Right.
So we were able to get started. And a lot of times I think you'll find, too, that when you tell people, like, hey, we're just getting started, right, you'll find that, I mean, just humanity in general, people like to help other people. So don't be too proud or prideful to ask for people to help you in your development, right? They understand small business just like anybody else. And so you'd be surprised how often people are willing to say, like, hey, oh, you're just getting started. Absolutely. Like, they're more than willing to help because they've walked that road with you, and they understand it. So, you know, so it's kind of surprising. And it really has been a great experience for me. But, I mean, even going back to the companies that I've started previous to this, even when I had more money, it was the same situation. I guess my guidance for my father getting started was one of the things he told me all the time is you have to leave your wallet at home.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as a kid, I mean, obviously that made no sense, right? leave your wallet at home was like, what?
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like, I'm supposed to forget it or, you know. But as I got older, I understood what he meant in that, you know, when you're negotiating with people, when you're talking to people, when you're getting started, you have to ask for things. I mean, our office that we rented, I mean, we went to two different places, and one of them was super, super nice, and one of them was an older building that we would have to do some work on. Well, I went out there, and I found some people online that were selling old flooring, and we went and we rented the cheaper office. Much cheaper office, but it's in a great area.
Right.
And we went in and we did our own floors and we fixed it up, but we found those floors used online for like pennies on the dollar, did the renovation and the work ourselves. I mean, you know, got in here and basically did like a painting party, painted all the walls. My wife took photos and we bought frames and put all the artwork up ourselves. I mean, all of those kinds of things to get our office off the ground. And we bought used printers online, you know, through government websites where they're getting rid of old equipment. And so, you know, all those kinds of things you can continue to do. Use your own personal computer or laptop for a while. Don't go out and buy a new one. You know, you don't need fancy tech and software and,
right,
you know, security and all that kind of stuff when you're first getting started. I mean, proof of concept is so much more important than investing tens of thousands of dollars before you know if you're going to even make $5.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we used a virtual phone system that was just, it was forwarded to our phones when we first got started. It cost us $10 a month to have a virtual phone number. So it was a business number that was caller ID would identify it as our business, but it forwarded to our cell phone when we first got started. Now we have, you know, the big sophisticated phone system, you know, and you can always get more sophisticated as you go. But starting out, you want to make sure that you're not putting yourself in debt, right? And you want to make sure that your company is going to be successful.
Right.
Proof of concept.
Gotcha.
I mean, landlords are willing to give free rent. Almost any building you could ever imagine. I mean, the fancy building that we turned down originally started out giving us 3 months of free rent and giving us like almost $8,000 to finish out the space however we want. Use, like, I mean, furniture or changing walls or painting or, I mean, any number of things that we would want to do. We turned them down because we had decided we were going to rent this space. Over the next 60 days, 3 months and $8,000 turned into 6 months free and $15,000. So, again, you'd be surprised what you can get if you're just willing to, you know, negotiate.
Yeah.
And not take the deal that comes to you. So
that's good. So, so one of your companies in the past, the real estate company, didn't you say that you sold $6 million worth of sales or something like that? What was the number? I think I'm getting it wrong.
The sales were actually much more than that. We raised almost $6 million.
Okay.
And we raised $6 million right after the market crashed. So
nice.
People told me I was crazy.
Yeah, I bet.
To be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I bet.
I mean, in 2009, obviously, everyone knows what happened in this country, right? And all the real estate and everything that happened. Well, I, as an investor, had been buying and selling cheap real estate in the Midwest for years, probably 7 years individually. I bought my first property in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when I was 19 years old, when I paid $5,000 for it. And I had every problem you could imagine. I mean, everything. From a bad deal to a house that was, I mean, basically almost a gut job to bad contractors who told me that they were doing the work and were taking pictures of another house that they were renovating and just taking my money. I mean, anything and everything you could possibly imagine that happened. So $13,000 later, I still have a house that needs a ton of work and we're nowhere closer to getting finished with this project, and I ended up having to turn that into a good investment. I ended up doing an owner finance deal with a nice couple. It was a family, actually, that wanted to buy the house, finish up the rest of the repairs that we hadn't done, and so we financed it to them. We financed it to them for $30,000. They put $3,000 down, and they started making payments.
Well, yeah.
I didn't get my money back immediately, but I got $3,000 of my money back, and then I had $450 that they were paying every single month for almost 7 years before they eventually ended up refinancing that deal.
Gotcha.
And so the first thing I would tell people is to stay fluid, right? Because perfect plans are just that. I mean, they're just plans, and you don't know what's going to happen. Well, that turned into, I took the $3,000 that they put down, I took that, I bought another property, a $3,000 property, and immediately sold it within, I think, less than 30 days for $11,000.
Right.
And that was in the early 2000s. Well, fast forward to 2009, the market crashes. There's, I had hedge fund connections that I had been working with for a few years, and I had done some consulting with and things like that. Well, they were looking for somewhere to offload all of these properties that they didn't want on their books. The liability of the properties was higher than the asset value itself at that time. So they were literally selling me this. They were selling me full-on homes for $100.
Yeah.
They were selling me vacant lots for $10. And so I took that concept and I took it to the market, and I got with a gentleman who had been in the real estate financing world and had a contact, and we partnered up together. And I said, hey, I've got the real estate, you've got the contact, let's go out there and let's raise some money together.
Right.
And so we took that concept to the street. And before you know it, I was a 29, 28-year-old kid out there doing seminars in California, in New York, in Marin County, in San Francisco. I mean, just really, I mean, everywhere where there's, you know, there's those people that are looking for those kinds of deals. And we started taking those houses, and we would buy them for $100. And we'd sell them online in less than 30 days, and we were selling them for $1,000. and then we were splitting the profit with our owners, with our investors. So
yeah.
Investor makes $500 back. We make $500 using their money. Everybody wins. They're getting a 400% return on their investment within less than 30 days.
And yeah.
They're not staying in houses that they want to. Then that kind of morphed into owner finance notes, and we would, you know, we would let people, if the house was in better condition, we would let them finance the house, and they put $500 to $1,000 down, so the investor was made whole immediately, and then everything that was collected was just profit.
Yeah.
It was a great situation.
Yeah, good.
And yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was crazy to be pitching that in a down economy, but I think everyone will agree that, you know, you buy stock when it's low, you don't buy it when it's high.
Absolutely.
Right, if you want to make money.
Right.
And so that was kind of the concept that we went off of, was, hey, we're buying these homes, we're buying large portfolios, and so we would spend $100,000 and we'd get 800 houses. I mean, you know, and it's like, how are you going to lose money on that?
Yeah.
You know, it was a really easy situation for us, and there were, we were buying in about 9 states, for the most part, most of the Midwest, so your Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania was the majority of where our inventory was, and there were a few other outliers, like Tennessee, Kentucky, Kansas, Texas, actually a few, in Florida, which was a pleasant surprise. Every once in a while, we'd get a few properties in Texas and Florida. And so it just kind of worked out that way. And as I said earlier in the interview, that, unfortunately, we were defrauded by another company, similar company. They were doing kind of the same thing we were doing, just on a larger scale. They were one of our outlets, and we were one of theirs at times, right? We would sell things back and forth between each other. They would get a portfolio from a contact that they had with a Bank of America rep or somebody like that, and then they would start selling it. Well, ultimately what ended up happening was the owner of that company got into financial trouble, and he started defrauding people. He basically started selling the portfolios he sold the same portfolio to 10 different people, and that's ultimately what ended up happening. And so the last portfolio that we bought was the largest one we had ever bought, and it was a total of like 1,231 homes. Well, those same 1,231 homes were sold to 8 other companies like ours. And when we all started, going to file our deeds and our titles and all that kind of stuff, obviously we all started stepping on each other, right?
Right.
And that's how it was discovered. And at that point, then the SEC got involved. And one of the things that ultimately happened for us was not protecting our investors' assets to do the due diligence that we should have done prior to closing that transaction was what led to our suspension. And it makes perfect sense. And that's the other thing that I would tell people is, when it comes to businesses, you have to be willing to learn from your experiences and then get back on the horse.
Right.
Because there's always going to be things that go wrong, and sometimes those things can go very, very wrong. But you have to be willing to get back out there.
Yeah.
So I would tell you, get back out there right away. Don't hesitate. Don't think, it's not going to happen for me. I mean, outside of the somewhat successful businesses that I've mentioned in this call, I've had 3 others that were complete failures. From an attorney lead generation website, a warranty company for automotive industry as well. I mean, there's been multiple failures as well. So, you're not going to just hit a home run right out of the park necessarily. You might, and sometimes that does happen, but sometimes it is trial and error, and sometimes a good idea is still a good idea. You just have to go back to the drawing board and figure out a way to redo it.
Right. So,
a different way to go about it.
So, what is the one thing that you would tell entrepreneurs who are about to start their business on how they can succeed in their first year of business? If you had one thing.
If I had one thing that I could tell them, I would tell them, reach out to someone that they can seek guidance and bounce ideas off of.
That's good.
When they need that. That is just such an invaluable tool. Somebody that's done it, that's been there, that's walked the road that they're wanting to walk is an invaluable resource for them. And I would tell them to, I mean, even if it's not somebody that, like, you know, prior, you know, I mean, somebody, I mean, I've done that for people. You know, they've reached out to me on LinkedIn and they, hey, I see that you own your own business. I'm thinking about that. I would love to just, I mean, can I buy you a cup of coffee?
Absolutely.
Like, can we sit down? Can we chat? I really want to pick your brain about some things, right?
Right.
And don't be afraid to ask for that advice. Ask it, seek it out, and have people that, you know, I mean, whoever your target is, you know, like, go to that person and ask them to pick your idea apart, you know?
Right.
Show you maybe where some of the pitfalls are, the problems that maybe you're not foreseeing, you know, things like that. But yeah, that guidance and that wisdom is, it's worth more than you could, I mean, ever imagine.
That's great.
More than any investor, any money, I mean, anything.
Yeah, I agree 100%. That's how I started my business is I kept having a hard time, and I reached out to one guy who was very successful, and he helped me, you know, really get it. So, final question,
mm-hmm.
Or what is, how do I phrase this? This is final comments. This is time for you to say whatever you want, okay? I didn't want to come out like cross. I wanted you to say whatever you want to say on this moment. So,
okay.
You could promote anything. You could talk about politics, religion. I don't care. I want you to say at the end of the show, you go ahead and say whatever is on your heart or whatever you want to talk about for the audience to listen to. So go ahead, brother.
Whatever controversial statement I want to make. Huh?
There you go. Well, there you go.
I would say if I had anything else to add to that, I would say that, you know, entrepreneurship is probably the greatest thing that you can ever do for yourself. Being able to do the, you know, to see your own labor turned into fruit is such a great gift. And to be able to create something, you know, is such a wonderful experience. And I'm not going to say that it's perfect or ideal because it's not. Being an entrepreneur has a lot of challenges that sometimes people on the outside don't realize or don't see, but the stress of, you know, not knowing, you know, that your paycheck is going to be there next week or the week after, you have to really kind of get used to some of those things. And so
right.
I would tell people as they jump towards entrepreneurship is a great thing, but don't look at it as it's going to solve all of your problems or your life stress or the fact that you hate your job and so working for yourself is going to be better. It's going to just be its own different problems. I mean, that the grass is always greener, right? It's a very true statement in
right.
all aspects of life, right?
Right.
And the same way that, you know, I'm going to leave my spouse to go find a new spouse that's better, and then you find that new spouse, and the new spouse has problems too. It's the same situation here. Being an entrepreneur is you know, it has benefits that working for someone else doesn't have, but it has its own problems as well.
That's awesome.
And I would tell people to just be prepared for that. Be
right.
aware of it. Know that you're going to encounter those things.
That's great. Glenn, thank you so much for your time, brother.
Absolutely.
All right.
I appreciate you reaching out and glad I could be of any assistance.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Okay.
All
thank
right.
you.
Bye.